Welcome in, Line of Logic. This is Alex Remizowski at Donald Remington, coming at you for the RBC Canadian Open this week. I'm going solo again this week. Rodo won. Mike Alexander could not be here. Hopefully we'll have him back next week. I'm going to go through the normal format here. I'm going to talk a little bit about last week's British Open, which was quite the spectacle, and then go into this week where we have the RBC Canadian Open up in Canada. Surprisingly, we've got a pretty decent field. Of course, if you know the tournament, it's not all that surprising. But coming off of a major, it's not too bad. Not too bad like it normally is. So there is a little something to be excited about. And then we got the PGA Championship coming up in a few weeks. And then we'll lead right up into the playoffs. Beautiful thing about PGA golf is it never really ends. Right after the playoffs, we head into a fall swing. Might not have the best fields ever. But hey, it's nearly year-round, so you can't complain about that. Had a bad day in NFL. Had to run over and play some PGA for the next week. So the British Open. An amazing Sunday. Really an amazing tournament all around. Carnoustie did not disappoint at all. The field, you wanted to expect something crazy as what happened. You wanted to see a Sunday as it actually ended up setting up to be. Francesco Molinari is kind of the man. I have grown to love this guy. He was just quietly hanging in there playing alongside Tiger. Nobody was talking about him. And rightfully so. He's with Tiger Woods and he's surrounded by most of the top names in golf today. He doesn't get a bogey all weekend. He said Saturday night after the third round, the conditions are going to change tomorrow. It's going to be a day where you're going to make as many pars as possible. He pars his first 12 or 13 holes. I think he gets one or two birdies in there. Pars a few more. Caps it off with a birdie on 18. Sticking it to 4 feet. It was crazy to watch looking back. However, I was one of the millions sitting there all day Sunday, hoping for Tiger to pull it off. I believe it was after 11 holes that Tiger had the lone lead, which is something we haven't seen in a long, long, long time for Tiger Woods in a major on a Sunday. Twitter was just madness for the entire day. The ups and downs, the mood swings of the whole world. I was right there with everyone else. It was a lot of fun to be a part of. Really, all that went wrong for Tiger was one chip over a bunker that he probably should have played left of where he was aiming. Put it out 15 feet away. He'd been drilling 15 footers all weekend. Could have made that for par. Instead, he just barely stayed outside of the bunker, short of the green, and ended up double bogeying the hole. Went on to bogey the next hole, and then finished up with some pars. He missed a short putt on 18. It didn't matter at that point. For some people on DraftKings and FanDuel, that might have mattered at that point. I think it mattered for me a little bit there, but it was an awesome day to watch golf. It didn't quite turn out the way a lot of people wanted it to turn out. But Francesco Molinari, man, that guy has been playing some flawless golf. Really, what it came down to him, came down to with him, was can Francesco Molinari play alongside 20, 25, 30, all of the world's greatest on the biggest stage at the hardest course, what has been called the hardest course in the entire world. We knew he was playing well. It's just that major setup, the biggest stage. That was the big question with him. I think everyone wanted to believe he could do it and thought, yeah, there's definitely a possibility. But putting your own money into that might change things a little bit. That's why we didn't see him all that highly owned. Because if that were Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy finishing first, second, first, the three tournaments leading up to the Open, especially being in the European Tour for some time, being from Italy, being from the region, having experience with the courses, with those type of conditions, you look back and you think, hey, I probably should have seen that one coming. He played a great, great tournament, and he totally deserves it. It was awesome to watch him play alongside Tiger Woods. Some other notable things from that tournament, we just had a stacked leaderboard all day Sunday. At one point, it looked like there could be a six-way playoff with six of the top 50 players in the world. Justin Rose narrowly made the cut on Friday with a birdie putt on 18. He had one on 17, missed it. He kind of had putts all day, but he was coming up to short. Ended up getting just enough to make the cut at plus three on Friday. Surges his way up the board with a 64 and a 69 Saturday, Sunday to finish tied in second alongside Rory McIlroy and Kevin Kisner. Kevin Kisner just played great golf. Really, mainly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but Sunday he did not by any means put himself out of the tournament. He ended up shooting 74. It was a little bit of an early slip up, but he brought himself right back in there. Minus six was kind of the number you thought, hey, that could end up being a playoff. But Molinari got those couple birdies coming in and finished at minus eight. It was really just great golf to watch. Xander Schauffele also shot 74 on Sunday. He was right there in the last group with Spieth. I really thought he was going to be able to force the playoff there. I'm growing to really like him. He clearly performs on the big stage. A lot of us saw on Sunday lining up that approach shot on 17 after nearly getting into some trouble. He needed to get up and down for par. He was a bit away from the green there. And the little baby starts crying in his backswing. He stepped away and laughed on camera. It was a lighthearted moment, whereas I think some other players that I will not mention maybe wouldn't have reacted that way. So that was fun to see. Tiger Woods, Kevin Chappell, the hungover Eddie Pepperell, Jordan Spieth of the 76 on Sunday. That was not easy to watch, but really, I don't think there was any defining blow-up moment for Jordan. He was in it for a long time. Closely followed up by Matt Kuchar, Tony Finau, Webb Simpson, Ryan Moore, Tommy Fleetwood, who was right in the thick of it throughout the whole thing. He played consistent and good golf throughout, as a lot of people expected he would. Jason Day, Zach Johnson. Zach Johnson was our leader through the first 2 days. Still up there after three. He ended up falling back a little bit too. The amount of names that were in that top 25 was just really, really crazy. So it was a tough week in DFS, but it was awesome to watch, to see all these guys up there where we expected them to be. On the other side of things, some missed cuts that definitely thinned out the field out there for us daily fantasy players. Dustin Johnson narrowly missing the cut. Not good. Not good at all. It looked like he was going to do it, and then he pretty much imploded on his last three or four holes on Friday. So that was huge. Top price guy going down before the weekend. Dustin Johnson at that. Like, he was one of the last people there that I would have expected to actually miss the cut. Two guys that I had as kind of low-owned flyers on the expensive end, Sergio Garcia and Hideki Matsuyama, both who missed the cut by one stroke in very, very depressing form for whoever owned them. Hideki got a triple on 18 on Friday. We didn't have any shot tracker. I was sitting there refreshing, saying, hey, this hole's taking a little bit too long. Boom. Triple bogey, missed cut. Sergio looked like he was going to be out of it. Got a few birdies, came back. Start thinking, okay, Sergio might make it to the weekend. I believe he bogeyed 16 after a couple birdies. That was very hard to see. So between Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, Hideki Matsuyama, amongst a few others, there was definitely some leverage by the people who decided to fade those guys or at least have a few lineups without them. It was a great major. It was everything you want from a major. If you could ask one more thing, half the world would probably say Tiger Woods to make that run and finish it off. It'll happen. I believe it'll happen. It's to be seen. We might have to wait. I don't know if the PGA Championship will be his place. It really seemed like everything was setting up well for him. But it didn't quite happen. So we're going to have to move past that. We got some big names this week. Definitely a field to break down here. And kind of easing that major hangover for all those golf fans out there. So I'll quickly say, if you haven't already, patreon.com/lineuplogic. It's a great community. We've got PGA coming at you weekly. We got cheat sheets. We got my model. You sign up for one price, you get it all. We've got a great team giving out MLB. They're in there talking MLB every single day. We've got WNBA floating around out there now. During basketball season, you get your NBA. During football season, you get your NFL. I know there's normally a weekly NFL show, podcast, a Friday night show. Plenty of content. You got cheat sheets for that, cheat sheets for golf, pretty much every sport around the calendar. So head over there, patreon.com/lineuplogic. You also get access to the Slack chat where I always am. Everyone who runs things will be in there ready to talk any sport, anytime, talk lineups, bounce ideas off each other. It's a great community. Love being a part of it. Highly recommended. With that said, let's jump on into the RBC Canadian Open for this week. We're up in Canada in Oakville, Ontario at the Glen Abbey Golf Course. Little over 72, pushing 7,300 yard, par 72. It's a well-known golf course. This tournament has been held here four of the last 5 years. It jumped around for quite some time and has then settled at Glen Abbey. Glen Abbey is a Jack Nicklaus design It was designed in 1976. It was his first solo design. We got a bunch of Jack Nicklaus courses out there. The most recent on people's mind would probably be Mirfield Village, the host of the memorial. So you can go back and look at that if you choose. See some similarities. See what worked there. See what didn't work there. It's a birdie course. There's going to be scoring going on. That's for sure. We've got enough information to go off to know that the cut will likely be under par. Over the past 4 years, it's ranged from -3 to +3. It's the past 5 years, four of them at this course. We got bent grass greens. They're usually pretty fast. They're very small greens. Fairways, bent grass, relatively small, not the easiest fairways to hit. The rough isn't all that penalizing, but there are a ton of bunkers out there, 85 of them to be exact, and water comes into play on quite a few holes. The back nine, you got a river or a creek, more river-sized. I believe it's called 6 Mile Creek. Runs along a few of those holes. So the never-ending debate of distance versus accuracy, I believe, can be determined this week through past winners, past runner-ups, and past results. Especially over the past 3 years, we've had Jonathan Vegas, Jason Day, 2013 Brant Snedeker, maybe not so much of a long hitter. Jonathan Vegas and Jason Day, yes. Runner-ups, Charlie Hoffman, Dustin Johnson, Martin Laird, John Rahm, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson, Matt Kuchar, William McGirt, Billy McGee. Long hitters are definitely going to be favored this week. We've also got word of a solid amount of rain going on in the area so far this week, and maybe even a little more expected heading up to the tournament, which means things are going to slow up. Those par fives, where you're going to need to score. If we're talking soft course, they're only going to be reachable by the longest of long hitters. The longer hitters, I should say. So something to think about. I'm definitely going to be favoring the longer hitters this week. However, there's definitely an aspect with trouble that does come into play. Greens and regulation always help. Birdies always help. Breaking down the course a little further, we've got four par threes. They're all over in distance. 10 par fours. Most of them are 400 to 450 yards. The rest are 450 to 500. Pretty average there. Par fives, a unique part of this course is you're going to see four of them. A lot of these par 70s and par 71s, we've seen two par fives. So we've got four. We've got four this week, and we all know that par fives are the scoring holes, especially when three of these par fours are 500 to 550 yards and only one is 550 to 600. So a bunch of them are going to be reachable in two, meaning eagles, meaning must birdies. So right there is where these players are going to be able to gain a bunch of strokes by birdieing. The front nine is really a scoring nine. You're going to have to go out there and you're going to have to start off hot. Birdies are very common on a lot of these holes. You can expect your winner to be anywhere from 15 to over 20 under par. So we're going to want some birdies. Stats I'm going to be looking at. DraftKings points is going to be big here. Fantasy points in general. Birdies pars, consecutive birdies, eagles, scoring. You need a score on a course like this. Strokes gained off the tee, implying distance, is going to be big for me here. Not so much fairway, more gaining strokes off the tee and hitting the ball a long way. Greens in regulation, strokes gained par five, birdies gained, and then a little bit of strokes gained scrambling in greens in regulation is good. If you're looking at a proximity, it's probably going to be 125 to 150, 150 to 175. I am leaning towards the strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained par five, strokes gained approach. Little tiny bit of short game mixed in there. If you want to look at putting on bent grass greens, I prefer to look at that over a longer time frame. FantasyNational.com has all of these stats, so I got my model in front of me. I'm going to try to base some of the upcoming analysis on that. So I think we can jump right into the field here. We've got a better field than you would expect the week after a major. Like I said, it kind of falls off quickly, but it's back to a lot of those names we've all been watching a lot prior to last week. I think it should be noted that the Barbasol Championship was also going on during the Open down in Kentucky. So we had a lot of these guys that you're going to see in the mid to lower price range playing last week. So we still have fresh information and stats on them, as well as the people that were over at the major last week. Starting off at the top, three of my favorites, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and Tommy Fleetwood. Saw all three of them last week. Dustin Johnson, we know, missed the cut, which is very interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays this week. At 11-7 on DraftKings, that's pretty affordable for what you're going to see Dustin Johnson at. And his course history has been very, very good. If we look at the three times he's played Glen Abbey over the past 5 years, he's finished T8th, T2nd, and T2nd. There's not much arguing you can do with that other than the fact he missed the cut last week at the British Open, which I'm sure burned a few people. And as we all know, being daily fantasy players, when someone burns you, you don't necessarily want to play them the next week. It was his first missed cut of the entire season. Every other finish has basically been in the top 25, top 20. Every other start, he's finished in the top 20. And then he missed the cut. It's hard to say. It was a difficult course. There were a lot of things happening that weren't exactly predictable. I'd say he's a safe bet to go back to normal DJ. 11-7, that's going to be up to you whether you feel comfortable enough to fit some more guys down low. I think it's definitely possible to play DJ, choose a guy in the lower nines, and then hop on down to the mid sevens and form the rest of your lineup from there. I think that's definitely an option. The next two guys I mentioned, Brooks Koepka and Tommy Fleetwood, they're both interesting to me. Tommy Fleetwood, Mike and I talked about on the podcast last week. People really like the guy, and people want to play the guy all the time. Last week, he was right there. He did what you wanted to do, him to do through three rounds, and then more like through two rounds, and then the next two rounds, he kind of fizzled a little bit and didn't necessarily hit the value you wanted him to hit, which kind of hurt. People could feel burned by him. Both Brooks and Tommy are making a long trip back over from Carnoustie, from Scotland, over to Canada in all of couple days. They got a couple days to practice and then they're right back out there. I personally would be leaning towards Brooks Koepka. He's got the course history. He's actually seen this before in 2015. He finished T18. He seems to just be a stud almost every time he goes out. And I like that. But I think there is definitely a possibility that you could see a lot of these guys kind of write this one off and be gearing on up for the PGA Championship, for the playoffs, for the Ryder Cup. There's a lot of different things going on here, and this isn't the largest tournament. But with the names here, you've got to think that the people showing up are going to be showing up to win, as always. You're not just going to go out there and not try to win. So if I had to take two people out of these top three here over 10K, it would be DJ and Brooks. Fleetwood, I think I'm probably ready to take a break on. He's not hurting anyone. He's just consistently underperforming, which gets frustrating. However, you could maybe get a little bit of ownership leverage off of that notion. Speaking of flying back over from Europe and everything, Chesson Hadley, Martin Kaymer, they've both withdrawn this week. Denny McCarthy, too. I hope no one was going to play him anyway, but they will not be in this field. Chesson Hadley, I think that's actually interesting because people seem to like him. People seem to gravitate towards Chesson Hadley, so I'm okay with that. I'm okay with him not being there. Never really know what to do with him anyway. Dropping down into the nines, this is where things are going to get very interesting. I think the eights are awfully boring. Not that many people in the eights at all. Really not too much I'm interested in there, but the nines are definitely a little interesting. I got to start it off with these top three here: Sergio, Tony Finau, and Bubba Watson. Sergio doesn't have the tournament history, but he's Sergio Garcia. We keep seeing him play okay on the off tournaments or the Euro tournaments that aren't the featured events on daily fantasy sites like DraftKings. I think this could definitely pull people away from Sergio. He's 9,900, and 95% of the people out there, their gut instinct is, oh, the last time I played Sergio, he burned me. That was awful. It's exactly how I feel. I've probably felt that way at least twice this season. And the fact that my gut instinct told me to walk right on by Sergio makes me think otherwise. When I pass someone up because of the last time they played, they burned me. It is a player of this caliber, I should say. It normally works out the opposite way. So Sergio is a bit of a conundrum to me, but I'm honestly leaning towards GPPs going right back at it there. Sergio is capable of a lot. It's tough. It really is. It's going to be hard to swallow, but I think I'm definitely going to get some ownership there because I think his ownership could be very low. Tony Finau jumping on down. I believe he's going to be chalky. He just, week after week, he really never disappoints all that much. He's always in it. We know what kind of player he is. He's a great player. He's bound to have some success and get a win very, very soon. This course makes a lot of sense for him. He hits the ball a long way. He's been out here 3 years in a row, T22, T70, T5. It's only 9,800. I think he really does make a lot of sense here. Bubba Watson, I am personally going to be staying away from. He's had a lot of good finishes this year, but you want to catch him on the right side of things, and I don't think he's there right now. He missed the cut at the Open. The 2 weeks prior to that, he did not play. He finished T13 at the Greenbrier, which was actually a better result than I think I expected for him that week. I'm still not ready to pay that for him. Matt Kuchar, great, great, great course history, but if this is going to be a slower course than we're used to seeing, I don't think he has the distance to stay up there and make those birdies, possibly eagles, on the four par fives. So my first thought with Matt Kuchar is to fade him. 9,500 seems a little steep. People were barely talking about him prior to last week. He had a decent finish last week, T9 at the Open, and now his price jumps right on back up there. I always have to mention Joaquin Niemann. I still think 9,400 is a bit high priced for Niemann. I think the guy has a ton of talent. I also think he's going to have a lot of success on the PGA Tour. But looking at this field and seeing him at 9,400, I can't justify that. This is his first outing at the tournament, at the course. I'm going to have to say no thank you there. And same to Jimmy Walker. He just hasn't been in form. Jimmy Walker's played here. He had a decent finish in 2016, but I will be fading him. From there, it's really Gary Woodland, Ian Poulter, Kevin Kisner. Gary Woodland makes sense on this course, being the player that he is. However, he's just not someone I'm ready to roster, and he's not someone I'm ready to roster at 9,200 at all. That's no thank you for me. Ian Poulter actually falls into the burned me last week grouping. I'm not going to be playing him at 9,100. He missed the cut. He's priced too high for who he is and what he's been doing. Kevin Kisner, I find very interesting. He appears to be playing a lot better. He seems focused as you're going to see Kevin Kisner be. Talking about watching Netflix and eating meals in his pajamas. He had 4 p.m. tee off time. He had a 4 p.m. tee time on Saturday and I believe Sunday too. That was where that interview came in. He's a funny guy. Very likable guy. But he's been playing great. He's got the course history to show for it. T26 in 2016. He finished T9 at this tournament, not at this course in 2014. But he's been playing real good. And I don't see Kevin Kisner garnering that much ownership. So I think he's a very interesting play. JB Holmes is another guy I actually like here. I have gone back to him a couple times. He was on a heater for a little while there. He fizzled out a little bit, missed the cut at the Greenbrier. He's taken a few weeks off, so we haven't seen him in a little while. He hits the ball a long way. I think he could make sense here, and I definitely like him more than a couple of those names above him. So I think 8,900 is a fair price for him this week. The next guy I'll jump on down to is Charlie Hoffman, who, as we know, goes up and down. He's up and down, he's up and down, he's up and down. I'm leaning towards a yes this week because he's been very consistent. He's finished in the top 20 his last four outings. Is one top 10 on the year. He's made 16 of 20 cuts. But finishing in the top 24, four tournaments in a row there. He knows what he's trying to do here. The Ryder Cup race is alive and well. He finished in lone second place last year at Glen Abbey. He had a T7 in 2015. and a T16 in 2013. So Charlie Hoffman, 8,700, I'm definitely, definitely into. Brant Snedeker, he's looking better. I've been waiting for him to look better. He finished T3rd at the Greenbrier, but he's another guy that I am... I don't even know what to say about Brant Snedeker, because I like him all the time. I really do. Because I know what kind of player he is. I know what he's capable of, and he wasn't showing it for the beginning of the season. He's gained strokes at this tournament. He won at Glen Abbey in 2013, but that was 5 years ago. Finished T5th in 2016, but we all know he had the injury after that. If you believe Brant Snedeker is truly coming back into form, taking into consideration his missed cut with a pretty large number there last week, then go ahead and play him. I would not put him in any cash lineups. I will likely be full fading on him, but it's not easy for me to do. If you're looking for a good Canadian to play in Canada, Adam Hadwin is next on the list there at 8,400. He's had decent course history, and he's been playing decent. He also went through a hot stretch this year. But, fun fact, no Canadian has ever won this tournament since 1954. This is the Canadian Open, and it has not been won by a Canadian since 1954. Maybe don't play any Canadians. I don't know. Unless you're a believer. Hadwin finished T7 in 2015. He's had a couple other made cuts. His most recent result was a miscut last year. Wesley Bryan, way overpriced on DraftKings. I'm not even going to talk about him. The sevens are where things are going to get very interesting, so I'm going to start going over a few of my favorite plays at this exact moment. One of them being Jamie Lovemark. Jamie Lovemark, who I have trouble staying away from in tournaments like this. He has not played at Glen Abbey over the past 5 years. However, he finished T12 in 2014 at the Canadian Open. His recent history has been pretty good. He's made his last three cuts. He hits the ball a long way, and his game makes sense for the course. He makes cuts. He's consistent. As consistent as someone of this level will be, I'm into Jamie Lovemark. I think 7,800 is a great price for him. Ben Ahn at 7,800. He's been playing some great golf this year. And he's right down here at 7,800. I think he's also a very interesting option. He's made 17 cuts and 22 starts. Four top tens. He hasn't missed a cut since the very beginning of June, which was right off the back of a second at the Memorial. The Memorial being a Jack Nicklaus design. So Ben Ahn, I really like him this week. I think that's a very interesting mid to high seven option for you. Kevin Tway hits the ball a long way. Yes, he does. I didn't mean for that to rhyme. I couldn't think of any rhymes further, so I'll just leave it at that. Kevin Tway hits the ball a long way. Yes, he does. Martin Kaymer withdrew. Siwoo Kim, no thank you. The next guy I am truly very interested in right now is Chris Kirk, who appears to be very underpriced if you were to ask me. He's had a good year. He's always in the mix. His last two starts have been T23 and T40, the John Deere and the Barbasol. T40 at the Barbasol is not very good. I still think he's underpriced for the field, for what we're working with here. He has 4 top 10s on the season. He's made 18 cuts and 22 starts. He hasn't missed a cut since the Houston Open in March. I think Chris Kirk, I think you could call him a cash game lineup here. He's got some pretty decent history at the course. He's having himself a good year. I say go for it. Chris Kirk at 7,600. Yes, please. Andrew Putnam, I want to say I like, but I don't. I can't trust him anymore. I was really bullish on Andrew Putnam for some time, but I think it's definitely time to take a little break there. And that brings us on to the 7,500 and below price range. I think we still have options in this range. Kelly Kraft has had some good finishes lately. He finished in 2nd at the Greenbrier, followed it up with a made cut and not much more at the John Deere. If he were to do a little better on Sunday, it could have been very good for me, very good for some others, I'm sure, and very good for Kelly Kraft. He was in the Open and he missed the cut. Ryan Armour also missed the cut in the Open. And so did Jonathan Vegas. Ryan Armour. He was playing great coming up to the Open too. So Ryan Armour and Kelly Kraft, two guys that were in very good form before the Open that I think are worth GPP plays. I think you could definitely see them playing there if you wanted to make a distinction between the two. I would say course history could come into play. It's actually very hard to determine. Kelly Kraft was cut last year where Ryan Armour finished T58, so I guess I would favor Armour there, but it's hard to say. Kelly Kraft has a couple extra rounds experience there. Both of them have made a good amount of cuts and have a few top 10s this year, so I think they're both good options at 7,500, and that leads me to Jonathan Vegas, back-to-back winner of this tournament. Not the best year he's been having. He's missed his last 2 cuts. It's hard to ignore someone who is priced at 7,500 who has won the tournament the past 2 years. But I don't think he's going to go very high owned, and he won the tournament the past 2 years. So I'll be putting him in a few lineups. I think I have to. He's won the tournament the past 2 years. He's finished in first place the past 2 years. There's something he likes here. He had a top 10 this season. A top 20. He had a run of like 5 tournaments of making cuts before those 2 missed cuts we saw in recent weeks. We know what he's capable of. 7,500 for back-to-back champion? I think that's pretty interesting. The next guy I'm going to jump down to is Keith Mitchell. Keith Mitchell can hit the ball a long way. He's been in great form for some time now. Finished in T30th and T7th in the Greenbrier and the John Deere. He then took a couple weeks off, and here we see him. He hits the ball a mile. I think he fits up nicely to this course. So I'm definitely interested in him. I think people are starting to recognize the name, which should be interesting ownership-wise. Someone who people are really, really starting to notice is Joel Damon. 7,400. I don't know how he's priced here in this field. It doesn't make any sense. He's gained over 33 strokes in his past 5 outings. That's with a missed cut, T23, T5, T2, T15, and he didn't play in the Open. Talk about form. He hits the ball a long way. He spent the first part of his career playing on the Canadian tour before he was diagnosed with cancer, cured of cancer, kicked cancer, went to the PGA Tour and started kicking ass. He's an awesome guy. He's been playing awesome. He's up in Canada. He's practicing. He says, great to be back to Canada where my career started. I don't even care about his ownership. I'm going to be playing a lot of Joel Dahman this week. Damon. Joel Damon. 95% sure it's Damon, and I've been saying Dahman. I'm also 95% sure that half of the industry calls him Dahman, so I'm okay with it. Abraham Answer, someone who I always follow a little bit because he's always cheap. He always appears to be like that no-namer who appears on the leaderboard and then disappears eventually. Someone to keep an eye on. He had quite a few good outings this year. You'll probably see him in the top 10 either Thursday or Friday. And then if I had to guess, he'll disappear from there, but he can get you fantasy points. He can win you a first round leader bet. Who knows? Two other people on my radar, Ryan Palmer and Nick Watney. Both have course history, decent course history at that. Ryan Palmer was playing pretty well. It's been a little while since he's had a good finish. Nick Watney, not so much. The course history is interesting, but I'll probably be leaning towards a fade with him. I always got to mention Chez Reavie at 7,300. This is like down there in his wheelhouse. However, he's missed a few cuts in a row, which I don't like. He doesn't hit the ball an exceptionally long way, but he's had good luck at this course. If it's not drying out, I probably would be leaning towards not considering him quite as much. Down at 7,200, Troy Merritt, who won the Barbasol last week on Monday when they finished the tournament. He's another guy we've shouted out on the podcast a few times. He finished T17, T43, and first at the Quicken Loans, the Greenbrier, and then last week at the Barbasol. Troy Merritt is clearly coming into form here. However, he did have to finish that tournament on Monday. It's not a lot of time to get prepared, but one thing I do like is he played at Glen Abbey in 2015 and 2016. He had a couple decent finishes. So I think he's a very, very interesting. He had one decent finish there, T32 in 2016, I think. I think he's a good option this week. Sam Ryder is the next guy I want to talk about at 7,100. We got a little chunk here. We got Sam Ryder and Harold Varner III. Harold Varner III is probably the one that's going to have the higher ownership. People seem to talk about him a little more. He makes the media. He's a likable guy. He's had a couple very good finishes in a row. He's also played here and finished T23rd last year. Sam Ryder is someone who I've been following pretty closely this whole season. His past four outings, T26, T48, cut, T2, T7. He was right there heading into this final day at the Barbasol, ended up T7. That's coming off of a T2 at the John Deere Classic. Sam Ryder at 7,100. Harold Varner is also severely underpriced at 7,100 for what he's done lately. A T5 and a 6 out at the Greenbrier and John Deere. He hits the ball a long way. He's going to put it together on a Sunday eventually. And I'm looking forward to that. So Ryder and Varner, definitely two guys I'm interested in, and I would not be surprised if they had a little bit of ownership. Two other guys at 7,100, Bronson Burgoon and Rory Sabatini. Bronson Burgoon is the one that I really, really think is a great play here. Another guy that I'd probably file with Harold Varner that they're probably going to get some attention this week. However, at 7,100, you're not going to see him ridiculously high owned, so I'm going for it. down below there, I'll mention a few more names as I speed up to wrap up here. Some darts. Cameron Percy. He's been playing okay. He's got some decent tournament history. Hudson Swafford at 6,800. A guy who used to be a staple of a lot of people's daily fantasy lineups. No more than a year ago. Finished T72, T14, T32 at Glen Abbey the past 3 years. If you're looking for a very cheap priced Canadian, David Hearn. I won't be playing him, but thought I'd shout him out. Hunter Mahan, 6,800. He was right there last week. Almost a guaranteed cut sweat. Make you grind your teeth a little bit Friday afternoon. But he's capable of running with it. He's played here a few years in a row. Mind you, he's gotten cut two of them. Don't love that. Tom Lovelady, he's been playing okay. And I think I'll refer you back to our Slack chat, our cheat sheet, and everything else that comes along with patreon.com/lineuplogic. We're definitely going to be in there over the next 48 hours updating. I always put my punts out there on the cheat sheet. It's when I usually go a little more into depth on Tuesday and Wednesday. And I have a little bit better of an idea of who I'd like to play from that price range. I just wanted to mention a few pricing discrepancies between FanDuel and DraftKings this week. I think it's interesting. Both sites came out with pricing, especially DraftKings, very late. Even betting odds are like few and far between right now. I think it's got to be something to coming back over to this side of the world from Scotland. We're also in Canada. A lot of things being figured out. A few people withdrew. Chris Kirk, 10,100 FanDuel, 7,600 DraftKings. He is just severely underpriced on DraftKings. I love that. I'm going to be playing Chris Kirk on DraftKings for sure. Harold Varner, another guy in that same boat, 9,000 on FanDuel, 7,100 on DraftKings. You got to play him on DraftKings. That is just a phenomenal price for him there. Like I was saying earlier, he could get a little chalky, but I love him here. And then Ben Ann, 10-6 on FanDuel, 7-8 on DraftKings. 11th top-priced option on FanDuel, 25th on DraftKings. I would play him on DraftKings. Two guys that I'm not that into this week, but the pricing difference is just insane. Wesley Bryan is priced 8,300 on FanDuel and 8,300 on DraftKings. I hope I have that right, but I believe that is what it is. He is the 54th top priced option on FanDuel and the 19th on DraftKings. You've got to play him over on FanDuel. David Lingmerth, 8,500 FanDuel, 8,200 DraftKings. That's 49th top priced guy on FanDuel and 20th on DraftKings. Another guy you got to play on FanDuel. Finishing off with our format here, you know, we used to try to make a couple punt plays. Or a one and done. Someone I like one and done wise this week. I would have to go with. It's off the top of my head here. So. Oh, this is a very tough one. I'd say if I have to go with a higher end option, it'd be Tony Finau if you haven't used him. If I had to choose a lower dart slash one and done here, it would be Harold Varner at 7,100 HV3, Harold Varner the third, and more of a mid-range option here. I'd go with Ben On at 7,800. Those are going to be my three podcast picks for you here. I like all three of them a lot. And that's going to do it. For me tonight with the RBC Canadian Open. We will catch you next week. Good luck this week.